How do you not have a curler? Someone wrote in and said curling? Oh, yeah. Curling, question mark? Dregs would have a curler.
Nah,
Dregs probably would.
Gushu. He's a Gushu guy.
Yeah, if you're a prairie guy, you know, you got to be a fan of some sort of curler, I guess. Here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger. Were you a curling super fan growing up, Dregs, or what?
Yeah, not a super fan, but a fan, no doubt about that. Just thinking names that come to mind, Jeff Stoughton, who was a terrific curler out of Winnipeg.
Let me guess, that guy had a mustache. I can tell the name, Jeff Stoughton.
No, hey, I'll tell you, Vic Peters had a mustache. Yeah, Sandra Schmirler, God rest her soul, she was a terrific curler.
Wasn't there a Kevin Martin or something like that? Wasn't he like the Wayne Gretzky of curling?
Hold on a sec.
Yeah, Kevin Martin, come on.
Kevin Martin is on TV. He's at the other network. He's an analyst of curling.
But I'm saying, wasn't he like the greatest curler of all? Like, somebody told me, and might have been Mudrick that told me he was like the Wayne Gretzky of curling. Maybe
you're
wrong.
You're from Edmonton. You're supposed to know this too, Noodles. Like, I'll stereotype. Anyone west of, you know, should know these kind of things.
Bald guy is the Gretzky of curling. Who's that guy, Dregs? Howard.
Russ Howard.
Old Rusty knows how to curl.
TSN forever. You guys are just outing yourselves.
I'll be the first to admit it, Dregs. I don't know a lot about it. I'm looking up Vic Peters. This guy's got great style. He's got a stash.
Same with me. I mean, I'm
from
out west.
Post Vicky Peters. I want to see
Vic
it.
Vic Peters. He was a three-time Manitoba curling champ. There you go.
I don't think he's with us.
No, he passed away. He passed away at 16. Yeah. I'm looking that up right now. But some great styles and smash and great curler. Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. I covered a few of his events early in my career, back in my Brandon, Manitoba, Winnipeg, Manitoba days.
What is with the drinking, Dregs? Like, people say you go to a curling event, everyone's just getting gooned. Like, even the people curling. Is that true?
No. I would say most days it's not true. So you guys have heard of the Brier, of course. It's the men's curling championship, right? The Canadian men's curling championship.
We're familiar with that. Yes.
All right. Well, I'm just making sure because this thing has gone sideways since the beginning of the conversation. I think the Brier patch still exists. And normally it's just like a big hall or convention center, or historically it could be a big outdoor tent, right? And, man, people, fans, curlers, media, you'd pile in there. I can't remember what the hell it was, but it was back in the day, my early days. I shouldn't even admit this, but you got a certain media symbol if you drank a minimum of 100 beers in 7 days.
Wow.
Now,
do the math.
Yeah.
That's a lot of beers. And I bowed out like on day four. I couldn't do it anymore. So,
that's like the heavyweight would set the tone on day one with like 28 beers, right?
Yeah, well,
and just set it and be like, all right, now I'm on cruise control. Just a few each day, and I'll get whatever I need to get. Yeah, we're into it. Curling, we're into
it. Okay, you got to watch some of it, man.
Well, I've seen it. I don't really follow it close enough. Like, Bob Weeks is the insider. He's the Dregs of the curling world. There was.
Hey, hold on. Bobby Weeks and I used to hang back in the day in the early curling days. Have him on sometime. He'll tell you some crazy stories. I've got a story I cannot tell. I'll never tell. I'll tell you in private. It was a wild one.
Yeah, neat. Nice. I think Weeks is in like the curling Hall of Fame, like just a
he is, man, he is.
Yeah, the Foster Hewitt of curling is Bob Weeks.
Legend.
with Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider. So what are you hearing in terms of the reaction league-wide with this schedule that's been released from the NHL in February and the back-to-backs and 3 and 4? It's going to be a wild scene, man. It's a short month to begin with. It's going to go by quick for a lot of these teams.
Yeah, and look, like a couple of Canadian teams, you know, jump out at you automatically. Like, I looked at Winnipeg's schedule. They've got a stretch of where they play 14 games in 19 days, 4 games in like 5.5 days, and then I think a total of 16 in the month of March. So Winnipeg's really going to, you know, they're going to be ground into submission in this. And they're expecting bad news on Nikolaj Ehlers. I don't know if you guys saw the hit with Orlov last night, hence the hearing, but they're waiting on an MRI in Nashville and doesn't sound very good there. And then Ottawa, I think Ottawa has 50 games in the 100 days remaining. And they have a total of, 15 games being rescheduled. But look, you know, I mean, from a Canadian team perspective, the rescheduling was done with good intentions financially, right? You know, they're trying to buy time so that the Ontario government loosens capacity restrictions and likewise across the country. So most managers are appreciative of that. They understand it from a business perspective, but they're worried. You know, they're worried about how tight the schedule is going to be. You're not going to have any practice time. Guys are going to get hurt. There's a lot of concern, but they also understand that there's not a whole heck of a lot the NHL could do otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the nature of COVID, and you got to get the games in. Everyone's got to play. And if you're battling for a playoff position, you mentioned Winnipeg.
Yeah.
That's got to be nerve-wracking because they're not a lock to make the playoffs. They are not a lock. And they've got to more than just survive in February. Like, you look at a team like the Leafs, who are the most comfortable Canadian team. They're well into a playoff spot. You lose a few here or there, okay. You know, dust yourself off, move on. You do not have that luxury if you're Winnipeg, if you're Edmonton or Calgary.
No.
Like, you got to get your wins. You got to play well.
Well, and then look, the other aspect of this is, again, we know it can't be perfect. But as I was reminded by the majority of managers that I reached out to as soon as the news came out from the league, it's evolving. So even though this is best intention, here's the schedule that all these teams are thankful that they at least have so they can work with. You know, the National Hockey League was quick to inform, all right, here's best case scenario, even though it's not best case for many of you. It's what we have to work with today. It could change very quickly and suddenly. You know, because of whatever COVID-related issues that the National Hockey League and Players Association are going to have to address.
Dregs, without beating a dead horse, we've talked to everyone about the Leon Draisaitl, Jim Matheson exchange. Yeah. What did you make of it? I mean, where do you think that goes?
Yeah.
Have you had any contentious conversations like that? Were you ever placed in that situation or had something like that happen with a player or a manager?
Or a curler
curler?
Oh, I've had lots of battles with managers and coaches over the years, more managers than coaches. Brian Burke one time called me. It was years and years and years ago. Naslin was hurt in Vancouver. Burke was the general manager. And I made light of it on the panel. I was hosting at the time, and Nick Kiprios was on with me, I think, John Garrett, Scotty Morrison, and we didn't make light of the injury. I think the point was when the Canucks left the dressing room, they tapped Marcus Naslin's sweater on the way out, and I just flippantly asked, I mean, like, what's that supposed to do? Like, does it inspire you? Like, what happens? And we kind of had a segment on it, and Berkey went wild. They called me the next morning. I was feeding my daughter. She's a young girl at the time. And F-bombs were flying, went sideways. And I fought back. And I said, look, I'm not going to have this conversation with you now. Let's do it on the air. You know, I'll be in later today. Let's do it on camera. And he basically hung up on me. And then about 10 minutes later, T.C. Carling, who was in media relations, called me back. And he said, Berkey wants to know if you're good. Everything okay? So I've had a few of those over the years, but not like this one. What's weird about this one, you know, people are saying, well, you know, it's the breakdown with the Zoom and all of that. But there's no Zoom here. Jim Matheson was sitting in the front row with Leon Draisaitl right in front of him in the interview room in Edmonton. There were people missing for a variety of reasons, so it was a smaller media contingent than normal. And to apply context here, like Matty asked, what, 5 questions in a row? And that was largely because, again, you know, there were only a handful of reporters there, so he just kept peppering. Now, the flip side to it is there are some who would probably know who just think that the media and Jim Matheson among them have it in and have had it out for Mikko Koskinen through much of this year dating back to last year. And Leon is a leader and apparently a good friend of Koskinen has taken that personally, and he's very protective. So maybe this was his opportunity. Frankly, I didn't like it for either man. I thought it was a bad look.
Well, what happens here, Dregs, if if they're playing tomorrow, they get smoked tomorrow night. You know, we paint a picture for you. They get smoked tomorrow. They lose the next two or three. Yeah. How does it just keep going, you know? Like,
yeah.
Holland came out a week ago or whatever, tried to patch things up and say the answer's in the room, all that stuff. But
yeah,
how much longer does it keep going, status quo?
Well, look, we did insider trading last night, and my sources reiterated that ownership and management is still invested in the group. They believe in that group, but they're terrified of what the next couple of games potentially could look like for the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, is there a place where Holland gets backed into a corner where he has no choice but to make a coaching change? That seems to be the most obvious and potentially the easiest. But what do you do? You know, do you elevate Glenn Gullitson? Do you look outside? I mean, there's been the Babcock rumor for a long time. Two things come to mind. I don't think, number one, Mike Babcock is interested, at least not yet. Maybe next year we'll see. Is he going to handpick if he has that luxury and maybe look at an American city where there's less attention than there would be in his second Canadian market? Probably. If you're McDavid, Draisaitl, have you done your homework? You know, are you voicing your concern over the potential of the coaching change, especially with all the speculation swirling around the last few weeks about Babcock? So if it isn't Babcock, who is it? You know, Paul Maurice isn't coaching this season. Maybe next year, but he's not going to do that to Winnipeg. So is a coaching change going to change the way this team plays? Because the number one thing that I've pulled a number of teams that have played recently against the Edmonton Oilers, everybody says the same thing. They're easy to play against. They're borderline soft. I mean, that's an indictment on those players. So is coaching going to change their approach? I'm not so sure. But to your point, Brian, something's going to have to change if it gets worse.
Darren, Jamie was brought up the name Klingberg. What is the status there? Like, I find it hard to believe where Dallas is just like, okay, we're walking away from this.
Yeah,
from this piece.
It just feels like, you know, that you've got obviously a disgruntled player. I mean, John Klingberg made that abundantly clear recently when he acknowledged publicly his displeasure over not being furnished with the contract extension, really having no meaningful talks. That's not to say that they're not going to engage, even though now maybe it feels like it's most likely. I mean, I feel like it's most likely that Klingberg gets traded. I think that he's okay with that. But I also don't want to detach him from the list of other pending unrestricted free agent defensemen who could be in play. It's still a little bit early here. You know, and Dallas has some work to do to figure out what direction they're going as well. I think that you could see an overhaul in Dallas, and maybe it starts at the trade deadline. And I'm not talking about a fire sale per se. Let's see where the Dallas Stars are as you get closer to March 21st. But I think everything's up in the air. Management, coaching, obviously the core of that team. I think everything is basically up in the air with the Stars.
Yeah, and that's a team that They've been in the mix in the West for a while. I mean, in the bubble, they were in that cup final. But it does feel like they've got some young players who are kind of taking over. And then they got the vets. Like, you know, Sagan's been there forever. Ben's been there forever. Now, you know, Pavelski, Radulov has not had a good year at all. So, you know, are we talking big dogs? Like, I don't know what. Sagan's got a lot of term left on his deal. Now he's got injury issues, and I don't know.
I don't know if you're talking about that, Brian, but I just, you know, because you're right. Some of those guys are going to be hard to move contractually, but, you know, what they've been trying to do has been pretty good, but obviously not good enough, and you've got a fairly demanding owner, I would say, there in the Gilardi family. So it just smells like change is coming in different ways there.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. I mean, the deadline is a lot of other things are moving around, but it's going to stay, I believe, at March 21st. So
yeah.
We're a couple months away from that. All right, Dregs, great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Okay, guys, have a good night.
Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider.